Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
An Egypt airplane was hijacked Tuesday morning and forced to land in Cyprus, Egyptian officials said. The plane was set for the short flight from Alexandria to Cairo, about 180 kilometers away. It landed instead at Larnaca Airport in Cyprus, about 540 kilometers northeast. The hijacker, who held the plane and crew, threatened to blow up the plane, officials said. However, news sources said the hijacker said he wanted to speak to his former wife, who lives in Cyprus. The hijacker, identified as Saif el-Din Mustafa, later admitted that he did not have explosives. The president of Cyprus told local media a domestic issue was behind the hijacking. The hijacker's former wife was brought by local police to the airport to meet with him. After the plane landed in Cyprus, video showed passengers walking down the plane stairs to a bus on the ground at Larnaca International Airport. Cyprus Public Television reported that the hijacker was a 27-year-old Egyptian. He asked for political asylum, the newspaper said. Just before his arrest, one man was seen climbing out of the cockpit window and sliding down the side of the airplane. Egypt's civil aviation minister said security on the plane was good, and the hijacker had not been able to enter the cockpit. That prevented a more serious threat, he said. Egyptian TV showed video of a man going through a metal detector and being searched at Alexandria Airport before getting on the plane. Last November, the Associated Press reported that the airport at Sharm el-Sheikh had gaps or holes in security. Gaps include a key baggage scanning device that often is not working. The AP also said that poorly paid policemen monitoring X-ray machines often take bribes. At that time, a spokesman for Egypt's aviation ministry dismissed the stories of poor security. He told AP that Sharm el-Sheikh is one of the safest airports in the world. But British Transport Secretary Patrick McLaughlin said that bag screening was insufficient at the airport. A retired senior official from Egypt's tourism ministry told AP that airport guards regularly skip or avoid security checks for friends and co-workers. Tuesday's hijacking will most likely damage Egypt's important tourism industry. It has already suffered from years of political unrest and a growing terror threat. An Islamic State affiliate in the Sinai Peninsula in October brought down a Russian passenger jet with a bomb planted on board, killing all 224 people on board.
The widow of a murdered Russian spy continues to try to bring her husband's killers to justice. Marina Litvinenko is the widow of Alexander Litvinenko. She spoke at the Voice of America offices this month. Ms. Litvinenko displayed a thick document showing that a British court said the death of her husband was murder. The court said the murder was probably ordered by Russia's top leaders. Alexander Litvinenko was an intelligence agent of the Russian Federal Security Service, or FSB. He was granted asylum in Britain in 2000. He became a well-known critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin. He was said to have started working with British intelligence officials, providing details of Russia's organized crime networks and of President Putin himself. On November 1, 2006, Litvinenko had tea at a London hotel with two men from the FSB, Andrei Lugovoy and Dmitry Kovtun. Litvinenko's cup of tea contained polonium-210, a radioactive element that can only be made in a nuclear reactor. Litvinenko died 23 days later. Shortly before he died, Litvinenko accused President Putin of killing him. In the nearly 10 years since his death, his widow, Marina, has worked to prove that the Kremlin killed her husband. She said she considers the recent ruling by the British court a step in uncovering the mysterious deaths of other Russian dissidents.
But this one, now, it's a proof. We have this in this verdict about Russia state involvement.
The British court's verdict came in January. Investigator Robert Owen led the British Court of Inquiry. The court issued a report that connected Lugovoy, Kovtun, and, by extension, Vladimir Putin, with Litvinenko's assassination. Robert Owen concluded that all the evidence suggests Litvinenko's murder was an FSB operation. The operation was approved at the highest level of the Kremlin.
I have further concluded that the FSB operation to kill Mr. Litvinenko was probably approved by Mr. Patruchev, then head of the FSB, and also by President Putin.
Marina Litvinenko said she is pleased with the verdict, but she is not giving up her effort to bring her husband's killers to justice. She came to Washington this month to meet with government officials, foreign policy experts, and journalists. During her visit to VOA, she said she was outraged that those who killed her husband for political reasons have escaped punishment. Instead, they have been protected and rewarded, she said.
These people committed very serious crime, and Lugovoy was not even punished for this crime. He was granted. He's a member of Russian parliament. He became politician straight after.
Russian officials have strongly denied any state involvement in the assassination. Russia's ambassador to the United Kingdom, Alexander Yakovenko, read a statement to reporters rejecting the charges.
We view it as an attempt to put additional pressure on Russia in connection with existing differences over a number of international issues. For us, it's absolutely unacceptable that the report concludes that the Russian state was in any way involved in the death of Mr. Litvinenko on the British soil.
Marina Litvinenko said she doubts that those named by the British Court of Inquiry will be prosecuted for her husband's death anytime soon. But she promised to continue her efforts. She said she hopes her efforts highlight what she says is the continuing operation of Kremlin-sponsored killing groups in foreign cities. She discussed at VOA the mysterious death of Litvinenko's mentor, Boris Berezovsky, who was found hanged in his bathroom in 2014. He strongly opposed Putin. She also mentioned the death of financier Mikhail Lesin, who was beaten to death last November while in Washington.
Of course, when very high-profile people as Lesin and Boris Berezovsky died, it's difficult to believe it was just a natural cause.
Marina Litvinenko also said she believes the work done by Owen and the British court on her husband's death will help in the investigation of the deaths of Berezovsky, Lesin, and other Russian dissidents abroad.
More than 75 tunnels used for smuggling drugs have been found along the United States-Mexican border in the last 5 years. Christopher Jones Cruz has more.
The United States and Mexico announced they discovered a long tunnel used to smuggle drugs into the U.S. They said the tunnel began in a restaurant in Mexicali, Mexico, and ended about 365 meters away in a new three-bedroom home in Calexico, California. Calexico is a small city about 193 kilometers east of San Diego. About 40,000 people live there. American officials say drug traffickers bought land in Calexico for $240,000 in April 2015. They spent $86,000 to build the house, which was completed in December. The announcement about the tunnel was made after police arrested four people in the U.S., and two in Mexico. Two women were arrested in Arizona, including a person who reportedly bought the property in Calexico. Police seized 1,350 pounds of marijuana in West Covina, near Los Angeles. Officials say the traffickers began smuggling illegal drugs through the tunnel February 28th. Officials say they began watching the criminals when they started using the tunnel. Laura Duffy is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of California. She said, "This house and this tunnel were constructed under the watchful eye of law enforcement. For the builders, the financiers, and the operators of these passageways, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. We will seize your drugs and your tunnel before you even have a chance to use it." Officials say this is the first time they have discovered a completed tunnel in Calexico in 10 years. They say drug gangs usually do not build tunnels into the city because the soil is hard. Officials say the drug gangs prefer to dig tunnels near San Diego. The clay-like soil there is easier to dig. And the area is near the Mexico border and has many large storage buildings where drug gangs can store drugs. More than 75 tunnels have been found in the past 5 years, mostly in California and Arizona. Many of them were not complete. The tunnel between Mexicali and Calexico was the 12th completed tunnel that American anti-drug agents have found along California's border with Mexico since 2006. Officials say the Sinaloa drug group in Mexico has for many years controlled drug trafficking along the border of California's Imperial Valley. Long, well-built roads called interstate freeways let the traffickers easily transport drugs from the valley to Los Angeles, California, and Phoenix, Arizona. The drug group has been led by Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. He escaped from a prison in Mexico through a tunnel in July. He was recaptured in January. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
A new report says that women are more likely than men to be religious. It is especially true of people who pray every day. Bruce Alpert has the story.
Women are more religious than men. That is the finding of a new report by the Pew Research Center. Worldwide, 83% of women say they identify with a religion compared to 79% of men, according to Pew. Pew found the biggest gender gap in daily prayer. Pew found 61% of women say they pray daily, compared to 51% of men. David Vose is head of the Department of Social Science at University College London, United Kingdom. He said prayer is often done in private, making it a good measure of how important religion is to people. The frequency of prayer may be the purest sign of religious commitment, which means that, arguably, it's the best yardstick to use in comparing men and women, he told Pew. Pew completed its study of religious differences between men and women by exploring research in 84 nations. The research was done between 2008 and 2015. Pew said the stronger religious beliefs by women stand out, given history's most important religious leaders are mostly men. That includes Jesus, Mohammed, Abraham, Moses, Siddhartha, and Gautama. And in some religions, such as for Roman Catholics and Orthodox Jews, only men are allowed to hold clergy positions. Among Christians, women attend services more often than men, but that is not the case with Muslims and Orthodox Jews, Pew said. Among those religions, men are more likely to attend services. Pew said this is because Muslims and Orthodox Jews give more weight to men's participation in worship services. Some Muslim mosques and Orthodox synagogues separate men and women. In some cases, women are limited to the back or a balcony area. There is general acceptance by both women and men about some religious beliefs. For example, 91% of women and 89% of men said they believe in heaven. 78% of women and 76% of men said they believe in hell, Pew said. Pew found that women who work outside the home are less likely to be religious than women who work at home. Vose of University College in London said researchers disagree on whether women who work outside the home are less religious. If it is true, he offers two possible reasons. Maybe paid employment crowds out time for religious involvement, or perhaps being exposed to different values and worldviews tends to undermine religious commitment, he said. Not only do women tend to be more religious than men, but Pew found men are also more likely to be atheists. An atheist does not believe God exists. In Uruguay, the United States, Germany, and Spain, more than 60% of people who describe themselves as atheists are men, Pew said. An exception is France. A slightly higher percentage of people who say they are atheists are women, 51% versus 49%. I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is What's Trending Today. Last Friday, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders held a rally in the state of Oregon. During the event, an unexpected guest joined the Vermont senator on stage, a bird. The tiny bird flew around Sanders. Then it landed on the podium where Sanders was speaking. Sanders and the bird, a house finch, stared at each other for several moments. Smiling, Sanders told the crowd he believed the bird's presence was symbolic. "I know it doesn't look like it, but that bird is really a dove, asking us for world peace," he said. The crowd went wild, and so did the internet. The play-on-words hashtag BirdieSanders soon trended. 5 days later, the hashtag is still a trending topic on social media. People called it the most heartwarming moment of the 2016 presidential election. Indeed, in an election season dominated by insults and negative campaigning, the sweet moment between Sanders and the bird was a welcome change. Social media users enjoyed artwork and graphics inspired by the event. Some graphics even showed Sanders as a bird himself. Senator Sanders tweeted a drawing of him and the bird looking at one another, with the word, "together." The Late Show host Stephen Colbert joked about the viral event on his show Monday night. Colbert suggested the Bernie Sanders moment helped the senator win caucuses in 3 states over the weekend: Washington, Hawaii, and Alaska. And that's What's Trending Today.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. The new SAT college entrance exam has arrived. In March, hundreds of thousands of high school students took the redesigned test. The exam is getting some positive reviews from some early test takers. High school students who took the test said the new SAT is more straightforward. The new exam focuses less on vocabulary words. It focuses more on everyday learning and analysis by students. On the old SAT, students lost points if they guessed the wrong answer. On the new SAT, students are not penalized for guessing. The College Board is the organization that produces the SAT. It says more than 463,000 test takers signed up to take the new SAT in March. This number is a small increase from a year ago. For now, the College Board is only offering the exam to students applying for scholarships and financial aid. The exam will be open to all students in May. The new SAT continues to test reading, writing, and math with an emphasis on analysis. Gone are some of those unusual vocabulary words. Test takers will see more common words used in the classroom. Students will have to show that they understand meaning in different contexts. In math, students will see more algebra and problem solving. They will no longer be tested on a wide range of math concepts. But the use of calculators is limited to certain questions. Overall, there are fewer questions, 154 on the new test, plus one for the essay. The old test had 171 questions. Students will have a choice about whether to write the essay. A perfect score goes back to 1,600 with a separate score for the essay. Brian Keyes is a third-year student at Woodrow Wilson High School in Washington, D.C. There aren't as many questions where it's trying to trick you. It was much more straightforward, he said. His classmate, Isabel Suarez, said, "I liked it better than the old one. I thought that it was way more applicable to what we've been learning in school. The English was a lot easier for me than it was with the old one." Suarez said she enjoyed the reading section. "My AP English class definitely really prepared me for it. I honestly enjoyed the grammar part because I like to pick out problems in writing. It was pretty fun, actually." AP stands for Advanced Placement. Students might test out of college courses if their grades and test scores from AP are high. This was the first change in the SAT since 2005. The head of the College Board says the new test has more familiar reading passages, vocabulary words, and math. David Coleman is the president and chief executive officer of the College Board. "The sum of the redesign of the test is to make it much more like the work that kids are already doing in high school," he said. Coleman added that the test was changed so that more students will feel like they have a chance to succeed. "With fewer questions on the new test," Coleman said, "there is more time for each of the reading and math questions." Lee Weiss is Kaplan Test Prep's Vice President of College Admissions Programs. He has some advice for students taking the new SAT. "If you've been preparing and putting in your study time, then you should go in confident. It's not the end of the world if you don't perform well," he said. Weiss says students should not skip the essay. Many of the top universities look at the essay. It is an important part of their admissions process. "Make sure you are writing a good, structured essay that answers the prompt," said Weiss. "Make sure that you are varying your word choice and your sentence structure." Ned Johnson is the president of Prep Matters, an SAT preparation company. He said students should not be too creative or artistic in their writing. Students should write in a clear, analytical style. Johnson says the math problems on the new test have a lot more words than before. The College Board has teamed up with online educator Khan Academy to offer SAT practice with the new exam for free to all students through quizzes and practice tests. The tests are available online. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.